Did you hear the somewhat shocking discussion last week on RN, both on Saturday Extra and a follow-up on Sunday Extra, about growing inequality? A book by French economist Thomas Piketty shows the gap between rich and poor has grown as large as it was in the 19th century. Quite startling. But is it decent, having the poor so poor and the rich becoming even more so? John Jurodini is a professor of child psychiatry at the University of Adelaide, and he thinks not.
Most Australians have experienced historically unprecedented levels of privilege. We may have worked hard for our achievements, but our current wealth and health have almost certainly come at a cost to others. As a child psychiatrist, I see the damage done to both winners and losers in our unequal society. My task today is to chart a decent response to this inequality. Decent is a difficult word. It carries an unwelcome implication of being buttoned up, one definition being satisfying the general standard of propriety. Decency shouldn't preclude vigorous protest in the face of inequity, but labelling actions as indecent is sometimes used to rebuke legitimate protest or transgressive behaviour. I want no part of that. To be decent is close to being kind and generous. But what our unequal society especially requires of us is to behave towards others in a way that is fair and proportionate. I accept the proposition that a decent person cannot be a person who's gotten away with something, cannot have what it is not appropriate for them to have. Now, this creates a problem because I do have more than my share, and I have it because of our current or historical exploitation of others. So where do we find guidance about a decent response to this moral predicament? Not from our political leaders or our most influential media. As with most things psychological, truth about decency is often found in fiction. This is partly because many decent acts are carried out privately and therefore escape our attention. Atticus Finch is the paradigm of a decent person. My favourite is Digger Keen, who navigates a decent path through war and relationships in David Malouf's The Great World. But there is no set of rules for decent behaviour. We cannot make a legal claim on someone to behave decently. If my identical twin is dying of kidney failure and I refuse to give up a kidney, this is disproportionate, rightly seen as a failure of decency on my part, but no one can sue me for it. At times, it takes great personal sacrifice to do only what is proportionate. In Nazi Germany, to act decently towards a Jew could be heroic. The concept of decent intentions holds very little weight. I know how I would like to have acted in 1930s Berlin, but I cannot be confident that my actions would have been different from those of the average German. Decent acts are kind and generous, but more importantly, they are selfless. Consider two employers. The first has a profitable business, while the second is on the verge of bankruptcy. Both take care to ensure that their employees are paid a fair wage. On the surface, their behaviour is indistinguishable, and so may be their character and their intent. Both act in proportion to what they judge to be their responsibility toward the other person, and to that extent, each has acted decently. But for the employer with the thriving business, the fair treatment of his workers is painless. Therefore, there's a sense in which only the struggling employer has fully earned the title of decent, because only she has truly paid a personal price in the course of discharging her responsibility. Politics and the media provide few models for decent action, but they teach us a lot about indecency. Malcolm Fraser describes the demeaning and miserable debate that encourages us to fear difference, to favour self over citizenship, and to do things for our family rather than for society. Three forms of indecency are strongly promoted by both major political parties and the Australian newspaper in particular: nationalism, globalisation, and the celebration of personal wealth. These ideas hurt many of the children that I work with, and they compromise us as a society. With regard to nationalism, one of the few poets that I can understand wrote, "If you could hear at every jolt the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, my friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie, dulce et decorum est pro patria mori." The Latin phrase quoted by Wilfred Owen can be translated as, "It is sweet and decent to die for your country." This is indeed a great lie, one that has cost countless lives. It can be decent to die for a child, for a friend, or for justice, but I cannot see how dying or killing for Australia confers decency on that death. So too, we should think twice about the absolute priority we set for the national interest. Is loss of life, suffering, or joy across the border a lesser event than in our own country? Like putting my family first, nationalism is often a rationalisation for personal greed and hostility towards strangers. Second, globalisation. My underpants are comfortable and very cheap. This luxury is a product of the same circumstances that led to the death of 1,000 people when an 8-storey sweatshop collapsed in Bangladesh last year. The dead were amongst the 3 million Bangladeshis sewing garments for around a dollar a day. It's interesting that we get much more angry about the harm done by people smugglers who bring us a commodity that we don't want, refugees, than we do with sweatshop owners who give us commodities that we do want, cheap underpants. Post-globalisation, how will we respond to the potential millions of refugees that might be created by the impact of climate change in Bangladesh, where water supplies in coastal areas are already being spoilt by saltwater incursion? As that country sinks below the encroaching ocean, is our debt for having the world's highest per capita carbon emissions exonerated by taking 100 refugees, 1,000, 1 million? Due to a variety of circumstances, some of which are outside our control, but many of which are of our own making, people are already coming to Australia in ways that we would prefer them not to. Might the decent thing be to respond compassionately to these asylum seekers, offering permanent refuge to those who meet criteria? At the same time, we could direct the resources and energy that we're currently wasting on offshore processing into working collaboratively and energetically with our neighbours and with the UN. We might end up with 100,000 more people in our country than we wanted. That might be a bad thing, but who knows that it wouldn't turn out to be good? And even if it created a burden for us, it's only a burden we are sharing across the world, and a decent ransom to pay for the spoils that each of us has accumulated through globalisation. When I was growing up, public displays of wealth seemed to be regarded as slightly shameful. Now, wealth is promoted as a virtue, and even as what God wants for us, or anyway for some of us. Wealth is at its most indecent when there is a failure to adequately acknowledge the contribution of good luck. We are mostly comfortable in taking credit for our successes, but look to blame circumstances for our failures. The same prominent financiers who had claimed to have eliminated chance from investment blamed the global financial crisis on bad luck. On the other hand, Norwegians have a saying, "Luck is loaned, not owned." This might help to understand Norway's thoughtful investment of its oil windfall. We find few parallels in Australia. Instead, our most financially fortunate industrialists say things like, "If you are jealous of those with more money, don't just sit there and complain. Do something to make money yourself, spend less time drinking, smoking and socialising, and more time working. We Australians consume massively more than an equal share of resources. While philanthropy does not confer decency, we should give either to those who are deprived or to contribute to repairing the environment. Giving has tax advantages as well as moral ones. Therefore, I envisage a sliding scale. Those with gross salary over $80,000 might give 5%, 10% of gross salary above $150,000, and 20% above $250,000. What about the very rich? Since they don't pay much tax, their contribution should be as a percentage of real disposable income. At least 80% of disposable income is proportionate and therefore decent, representing only a fraction of their net assets, and falling significantly short of Warren Buffett's undertaking to give away 99% of his total wealth. All of us, not just nationalists or neocons, have the capacity to act according to fear and greed rather than fairness. When we perceive the world as hostile and dangerous, we can justify ruthless self-interest. We have learned from a century of observation and research in child development that this ruthlessness is adaptive in early infancy. But with maturation, it should give way to a very different attitude, empathic concern for others, and a desire to make reparation for damage done, both of which characterise decency. To respond with empathy, particularly when it involves people who aren't like us, often requires more than immediate emotional sympathy. Working to become empathic demands imagination, recognition of the role of luck in determining people's circumstances, and a capacity to tolerate healthy but potentially uncomfortable feelings like anger, shame, and sadness. Because being empathic is demanding and potentially painful, we're all subject to retreating from it, perhaps to a state dominated by fear and self-interest, or to despair, or manic excitement and the reckless pursuit of personal happiness and achievement. We then become less than decent. So, to lead a more decent life requires that we face up to inconvenient truths, including that we are using more than our fair share. We must replace our sense of entitlement with gratitude for good fortune, making us more likely to want to give. And when we do give, it should be an act of selfless kindness rather than currying favour. Being decent entails being curious about the complex circumstances of strangers, like asylum seekers, rather than turning a blind eye or reacting with slogans. Acting decently requires tolerating uncertainty rather than seeking pat solutions, such as dividing Syrians into goodies and baddies. Decent action will be based on seeking out authentic stories rather than the passive acceptance of what is fed us by the Murdoch media. Decent people do what they ought rather than what they want.
John Jurardini is Professor of Child Psychiatry at the University of Adelaide. He gave the Australian Refugee Association oration this year. The book on inequality I mentioned before is Capital in the 20th Century by Thomas Piketty. I'm Robin Williams.
Hi, it's Kate Evans here from Books Plus. If you were writing a book, what would you call it? And how would you hook me by the navel? What would be your first sentence? Tell us, and you could have your own festival of reading. A book pack selected by the director of the Sydney Writers' Festival, especially for RN listeners. There'll be a winner from each state and territory. And in May, join us at the festival. Details, look for Sydney Writers' Festival on the RN homepage.